You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Welcome, superbly super, super civilized, not superfluous, nor superficial, superhuman, and superhero superfans post-Super Bowl. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 48, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your seminar of semi-aquatic and semi-sweet semi-pros who semi-talk about semicolons and seminiferous tubules.
Whoa.
We do talk a lot about
that. I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris. Well, as our constant listeners know, I was out sick last week for the sleeping episode. However, this did not mean that I didn't do my research for the sleeping episode. And
it's the only reason we allowed you back.
Yeah, I definitely do not want to let this go to waste, because when I thought about sleeping, I was like, okay, I want to answer a very important question. Do dogs dream? We always see, it was recently, like, I was sitting at my computer, probably thinking about Good Job Brain, and I heard, like, yelps from the other room. You know, I heard a little dog, Ricky, going like, which are noises that he doesn't make, you know? And I'm just like, oh my God, he's just dreaming. He's like on his side, his paws are kicking.
Yeah, right, that's right. So funny.
And that's what we say. We say, oh, you know.
Just imagine he's chasing something.
Like, yeah, he's chasing rabbits or
like
whatever,
dream
right?
Hunting. Yeah.
So, but then again, it's like, well, is that really happening or not? There actually is an answer, so let's go in. You know, typically when I research Good Job Brain subjects, I'm like doing it with the utter dispassionate attitude of a scientist. Like, okay, all right, I'm going to research something and I want to see if it's true or false or whatever.
I'll see where the facts take me.
Yeah.
This one I was really pulling for to be true. Yeah. I really, really wanted dogs to dream. So let's find out. So this all starts, as all great experiments do, with rats running in a maze. It doesn't even matter what it is you're trying to figure out scientifically. You always have to get some rats and make them run around in mazes, yeah, to whatever end.
What's the rat and maze industry really is? Yeah. You're in the pocket of big rat.
Yeah.
So a researcher at MIT a few years ago measured the brain signals of rats as they were running around on a track. And then it measured the brain signals of rats with little, you know, tiny little electrodes as they slept that night, and found that the signals that were coming out of the rats' brains during REM sleep, during the rapid eye movement portion of sleep where you dream, were basically identical to the signals that he was getting when they were running around in the track. They were so similar that he could essentially point the data and say, I'm pretty sure that at this point, the rat is dreaming about being in this particular part of the track, and whether or not the rat is moving or standing still. So at that point, the scientists who were looking at this were like, these rats are dreaming about running around in the maze. They're rehashing the day's activity because it's so close. It's so similar. Mm-hmm. So dogs' brains being much awesomer than rat brains.
That's a scientific term.
You know, right? If the rats can do it, clearly we imagine that the dogs might. Okay. So if you want more proof than that, fine. There's a part of your brain stem, which is, oh, by the way, I'm going to go back into the brain, which is always really tricky for us on the show because I always screw something up. As it turns out, the brain, kind of complicated. So I apologize to any neuroscientists listening in, and please leave comments on the website if I'm wrong. There's a part of the brain stem called the pons, and the pons releases a chemical that not only does it put you into REM sleep, but it paralyzes you while you're sleeping. I know you guys talk about sleep paralysis, right? You actually want to be paralyzed when you are sleeping, because if you're not paralyzed while you're sleeping,
you're just walking around doing weird stuff.
You will sleepwalking disorders.
So the comedian that we like, Mike Birbiglia, right, has rapid eye movement behavior disorder.
Right.
He doesn't get paralyzed when he goes to sleep, so he gets up and acts out his dreams, which might involve jumping out a window and almost killing himself. So if you want to know what your dog is dreaming about, you can just take the pons out of your dog's brain.
What?
Now, they don't do this anymore.
Okay. Because, but they did.
They took the pons out of some brains of some dogs. Guess what happened?
They did stuff.
The dog would go to sleep and then go into REM sleep and then just get up and
start
acting
around.
Out all the stuff they did during the day.
Just like taking out the inhibitor.
If you had a hunting dog, the hunting dog would flush out imaginary birds out of imaginary bushes. And they would go on point. You know how dogs would go on point. They would do that in their sleep. 100%, no question, dogs are dreaming about activities that they are doing.
Oh, yeah.
But don't take out parts of your dog's brain.
Don't do that. Yeah, I'm sure Ricky was happy to hear that was not on your agenda.
I let him know that I was not about to do
that.
Yeah.
Dear dog, I will not take parts of your brain out.
Just to see what you were dreaming about. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Chris. And without further ado, let's jump into our general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hotshot.
Damn.
All right, and I have a random Trivial Pursuit card here, and you guys have your buzzers. Ready? Let's go. Blue wedge for geography. What Italian city claims to be the birthplace of pizza? Chris Kohler.
Napoli.
Yes.
Is that true?
Naples.
Naples.
Oh, Mr. Italian.
Yeah. That's 2 points. I got an extra point.
Pink wedge for pop culture. What alias did Stephen King pen novels under because he was writing so many books his publisher worried about overexposure? Buzz too early. Dana.
Richard Bachman.
Correct. Yeah, Richard Bachman.
I was really trying to time it at the end, and the question just kept going.
All right, yellow wedge. What soft drink does George W. Bush usually gulp when toasting guests at the White House? Colin.
Just because he's from Texas, I'm going to guess Dr. Pepper.
Incorrect. That would be my guess, too.
Ginger ale.
Incorrect.
Mountain Dew.
No, it's the answer is 7-Up.
Huh. Okay.
All right, purple wedge. What book, besides the Bible, are you likely to find in your Marriott hotel room?
Besides the Bible.
Is it the Book of Mormon?
Correct. Oh, it is the Book of Mormon. Oh, founder John William Marriott was a devout member of the church.
Of course, and Mitt Romney just rejoined the board of Marriott Hotels.
Did not know that.
Yep.
Green wedge for science. These words are used to describe shapes of what natural item? And there's a list I'm going to read. Elliptic, lance, palmate, spear, or trifoliate.
Are those clouds?
Incorrect.
Those are leaves.
Correct. Ah. Those are leaves. I think the palm one was
the trifoliate, I suppose. Trifoliate. Yeah. Foliate.
Leaves
of
three.
Yeah.
Orange wedge, last question. What car maker made the Aspire, Probe, and Tempo? Colin.
I'm pretty sure that was Ford.
Correct.
Yeah.
Probe.
The Probe.
The Ford Probe.
Yes.
So, we are currently recording this episode right now, hours before the Super Bowl, the grand American football event of the year.
Yes.
So, by the time you're actually listening to this, it should be the day after, and the game will be over.
Hopefully.
So, yeah. With the power of prophecy, or rather sound editing, congrats to the winning team.
The Baltimore Ravens.
Go, team, go!
Oh, that's great.
You guys did awesome.
I would absolutely say, no question, that
the Baltimore Ravens
are my favorite football team.
It was really impressive the way they footballed, much better than
the San Francisco 49ers.
Footballed.
And to all fans of
the San Francisco 49ers,
don't worry, you'll get them next year.
So today, we are talking about sports.
Y'all ready for this?
I think the goal of this episode should be sports for non-sports fans.
Yes.
I think it should be, like, even if you don't care at all about who is playing in the Super Bowl, or maybe you've never even heard of the Super Bowl, there will be something in this show for you, hopefully.
Cool. Otherwise, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Very divisive among trivia nerds.
There are, like, kind of two camps. There are the people who like sports trivia and people who don't think that sports trivia belongs in proper trivia.
So I'm probably in the second camp, but maybe I think it's overrepresented in proper trivia.
Right.
I think
sports
is overrepresented.
I think the problem is that a lot of people just aren't sports fans.
It's kind of binary, isn't it? I mean, you're either like a sports fan and know a whole lot about sports, or you really just don't know very much at all.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, sports is great for trivia because there are these indisputable numbers and records, and they scored this many points, period.
And not only that, but it just generates trivia on a constant basis.
Right, exactly.
It's just so hard to care about it.
I think that's really the rub, but like sports, if you don't care about football at all, you're not going to care about who scored the first touchdown in Super Bowl XI. Yeah.
That's right. Colin is our sports guy at trivia, and as we often say, Karen and I, the only time ever scored a perfect zero on a round of trivia was Karen and I trying to do sports by ourselves.
It was sports general. It was general sports. Yeah. So since it's the Super Bowl, I want to talk about football.
Yeah. Yay!
And by football, I actually really mean soccer.
Oh.
There have been so many times in my life where, you know, I would say, oh, soccer. And they're like, oh, you mean football. And I was like, well, no.
Depends
there's
on where you live.
American football. So why is this? Why do we call soccer soccer? And why does almost the rest of the world call it football? Here's the skinny. Soccer is actually a British term, which is weird because they call soccer football.
And they're real jerks about it,
too. I know! Some of them are. throughout history, there's been a lot of various games in sports simply called football.
Sure.
They're not the same,
right.
But it's very straightforward. You have a ball and you kick it or you do something with your
legs. Yeah, you don't need to like convene a linguistics committee to come up with a name.
Football. A lot of these games are similar, but they all have different rules, maybe different equipment, maybe different number of people playing it. In the mid-1800s, a group of athletes and officials set out to actually standardize the rules of this sport so they can play their matches under consistent regulations. So it's not like, oh, wait, we play it this way and we play it that way.
And this is a common story in the history of a lot of sports is there were 18 different ways to play until we first agreed and standardized.
Mm-hmm. And so they named this type of football sport association football.
That's right.
So this way it won't be confused with other types of football, like rugby football and other games at that time. Association football doesn't really roll off the tongue so easily. And so it was very popular in the British culture to shorten certain words.
I see where you're going with this.
ER, the sound er, at the end of the word. So like potato becomes tater, right? Okay. So a lot of little nicknames. And rugby becomes rugger. Mm-hmm. And association football becomes a soccer.
Right.
Oh, my
which
God.
Which eventually, soccer, without the A.
The SOC, you can see it's right there. Yeah,
yeah, there it is.
Yep.
And at that time, soccer was kind of a sport for like the upper echelon of society. And as the popularity of association football spread to the lower classes, they just called football football. And that became the more popular name. Mm. So soccer was kind of a more of a highbrow name. But it spread so quickly, people just called it football. So that's why it went from soccer back to football.
I love that. And like,
we kept soccer.
And as you say, like they really, I mean, rugby and American football and soccer and all these games really all sort of had the same proto game. You'll hear a lot in the media, what we call soccer and the rest of the world calls football. Mm. And like, that always kind of rubs me the wrong way because it's an oversimplification because it's not true. There's American style football. There's Canadian rules football.
Yep, Australian rules football.
There is association or soccer football. There's rugby. There's 11 rugby. I mean, there's all these different variations. So I don't know. I'm standing up for us as Americans. You know, it's yes, we call it football because it's American rules football. Sounds silly to say.
Okay. I have another soccer tidbit for you guys. What person in a soccer match moves the most in a single game?
You mean like covers the most distance?
Chris.
The goalie.
It sounds like a trick question that it's going to be a goalie, right?
Like maybe he's just like constantly running back and forth. I don't know.
I'm going to guess, I don't know, the striker.
So these are people who are on the team, or is this a trick? Is it like the referee?
Oh, or
it is a trick.
Because I was like, I don't know anybody on the soccer team.
It is the referee.
Oh, okay.
So according to data from the U.S. Soccer Federation, refs tend to run 12 miles during a game, which is 5 more than the players.
Huh.
It's amazing because referees can be almost twice the age of the actual players and can keep up. And I was reading an article on CNN about a guy training or wanting to be a World Cup referee. And it is insane. insane because they have to go through a set of like really, really crazy tests to test your speed, to test your stamina, and crazy training schedule. They have to eat like athletes. Basically, they're on a schedule to be like athletes.
Right, right.
But the crazy thing is they have day jobs.
Yeah. Like,
these are regular people. These are people who work at Visa, who work at different companies.
American football is the same. American football refs.
Oh, really?
They work during the week. But yeah, NFL refs, many of them are lawyers and they have weekly jobs. Yeah.
And to add on their day job, they have this ridiculous super athlete training schedule so that they can ace these FIFA tests when it's time to apply to be a ref. And one more quick soccer fact. Do you guys know what the name of the classic black and white soccer shape?
Round.
Is it a is it some sort of crazy?
I'll give you $1 million.
You mean the name of the pattern of the, what are they, like hexagons?
The name of the shape.
The name of the shape. It's a
3D shape.
Yeah, it's a duodecahexa something on. You know what I mean? Sure. Yeah, it's one of those.
I don't know. I know it's made up of two different shapes.
Is it natiform?
It is called a truncated icosahedron.
Yeah, okay.
Icosahedron.
Yes, okay. And it's made out of 20 hexagons and 12 pentagons.
That's what, okay. Yeah, I knew it had two different shapes in there, yeah.
So there is C60, which is a molecule, and it's 60 carbon, and it's like a little cage. It's like a little ball. It looks exactly like a soccer ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Called the Buckminster Fullerene.
Oh,
Buckyballs.
Yeah.
Yes, the Buckyball name was inspired by the Buckminster Fullerene.
I don't think they actually use that soccer construction in the World Cup anymore.
No.
I think they switched to a two or three panel construction.
They have some high-tech alien-looking balls.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that classic that we kind of grew up with of
they
the
don't
black
use that
and
anymore?
White. They don't use that at the high levels of competition anymore.
I don't even know how you would even call that soccer now.
All right, well, I have a question for you guys here about some famous professional athletes.
Okay.
And I tried to pick some that I'm pretty sure that even as non-sports fans, I hope you guys have heard of these people. So.
Thanks, Colin.
Can you guys tell me, what do the following people have in common?
Oh.
Tiger Woods.
Okay.
Maria Sharapova.
Okay.
Alex Rodriguez.
Uh-huh.
Shaquille O'Neal. Aside from being enormously successful in their respective sports. Yeah. Tiger Woods, Shaquille O'Neal, Maria Sharapova, Alex Rodriguez.
They all are spokespeople for products.
Oh, that's true. They are. And that's actually, that's not the answer I was looking for, but I'm glad you said that.
Their love lives all appear in tabloids.
They all breathe oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide.
Oh, good one.
No, in addition to all being humans and receiving endorsements, they are all residents of the state of Florida. And one of the reasons that they all choose to live in Florida, aside from the nice weather, is that Florida has no state income tax.
Oh, okay.
And so it seems fairly obvious. Okay, yeah, I make a lot of money. You want to live in a state where you have to give up as little of it as possible.
Absolutely.
And this isn't limited to athletes. Of course, many business people will choose to live in a state that has a lower tax rate and commute in, for example. This is particularly attractive when you make millions and millions and millions of dollars on endorsements in addition to your regular day job. There are 9 states with no state income tax, but Florida overwhelmingly draws most of the athletes there to live there.
Well, it's nicer to live in than New Hampshire, for example.
Right. Well, so I mean, it has to be a state that has no state income tax and a pro sports team. So that limits it really to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, state of Washington, and then D.C. There's a weird quirk, too, like athletes in New York. New York City has a separate New York City tax. So there's New York State and New York City tax. So a lot of New York City athletes will live in New Jersey. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Now, have any of you guys heard of the jock tax? Do you know what this is?
Do athletes have to pay stadiums or something?
No. So in the early 1990s was really the birth of what we call the jock tax now. So in 1991, Michael Jordan and the Bulls beat the LA Lakers for the NBA championship. And after they won the championship, it was really publicized how much extra bonuses Jordan got for winning the championship. And this is common. A lot of athletes have incentives. And the state of California basically said, wait a minute, look at all the money that he is earning and he's doing work in our state. So in 1991, state of California essentially enacted a law that would allow them to recoup taxes from people doing work in that state. And they sent the Bulls a bill, essentially, for the taxes that they owed for the 3 days they were playing in California during the finals. In pretty short order, a lot of other states caught on. You know, as happens a lot, if California does something, other states are like, well, shoot, we can do this too. This was the birth of the jock tax, which essentially is states billing pro athletes for all of the work they do in that state. Now, imagine you're LeBron James, okay? You play for the Miami Heat. You go on the road. Mm-hmm. You might play in 20 different states over the course of a year. And what that means is, unfortunately, you need to file taxes in all of those states. All of those states are going after money. And here's where it gets really complicated, because every state has their own tax laws. You basically have to figure it out state by state what you do. You know, some states, you can choose between the higher rate and the lower rate. Some states, you have to pay it. Some states, there's no tax. So if you're an accountant for a professional athlete, you're really earning your money.
I mean this creates these jobs of accountant to the professional athletes, because like they need someone who's familiar with all of these different states and all of the different loopholes and everything.
Each sport's a little bit different. Baseball has a concept of duty days, so if I fly into town on Monday, play a game on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then fly back out on Friday, some states, they'll want to charge you for each of those days. Some states charge you by game. That is the jock tax.
Wow.
So if you think your taxes are complicated, imagine having to file in 25 different states every year and having a different amount in each one. And as you might imagine, the state of California makes millions and millions of dollars by claiming these taxes.
Sounds like a nightmare.
So I have a quiz about sports. Being a non-sports person, I couldn't tell what was an easy question or a hard question. So I decided to take it in a different way. This quiz is called, What You Talking About Sports? So I will give you alternate names, possibly obscure names of sports that are very familiar. And I want you to tell me
the common name.
The common name of those.
What you talking about sports?
What you talking about sports?
Instead of buzzing in, I'll have you guys write down your answers and we'll see what you think.
All right.
Got it.
Number one. Korfball, slam ball, netball are all variations of what sport?
I know netball from Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah. All right. Everybody says basketball, yes.
Yay!
They are all variations of basketball.
Netball.
Netball is the one, right? It's like basketball with no backboard, right?
Yeah.
It's just like a rim on a pole.
And more women play that one.
Yeah.
Fistball, hooverball, bossa ball are all similar to what sport?
Bossa ball.
Fistball.
Bossa nova.
All right. Cullen says tetherball. Karen says baseball. Chris says volleyball. It's volleyball.
Wow!
I just thought of hitting a ball with your fist, you know?
Poppin' Jay, Gung Do, and Target and Field.
What? Poppin' Jay,
Gung Do.
And what? Target?
Target and Field. We got Colin and Karen say archery. Chris says skeet shooting. It's archery.
It's archery. Yeah. That's the more obvious answer than skeet shooting.
I'm like, well, there's a target out in
the
field.
That's exactly.
What would an 8-year-old think?
That was my thought process too, but it just led to the wrong place.
Duck pin, candle pin, and tin pin.
Oh.
Bowling. It's bowling, yes.
Yay, bowling.
We used to go candle pin bowling in New England. I think you still
That's
can.
A real easy... I think it's an East Coast thing, like duck pin.
You basically... The pins are really thin, and they're just basically like cylinders.
Uh-huh.
And then the ball, it's small, and you hold it in your hand. It's like the size of like... Imagine like a big softball.
So are the lanes smaller?
Not sure. Haven't
done
it in a
while. Yeah, it's scaled down.
I was smaller. I was like 8 years old, so lanes appeared larger.
All right. Flutter guts, frisky... Durango boot and Goldtimate.
Goldtimate. Let me see the old.
Goldtimate?
Yeah.
Oh!
Karen seems awfully confident.
Yeah. Let's see. Colin says horseshoes. Karen says frisbee. Chris says soccer. It's frisbee.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, I thought that was a trick question, because I'm like, well, that sounds like ultimate. I know ultimate.
It is, but it was with gold.
Gold.
I've never heard of Goldtimate.
Okay, what do these have in common? Pyramid, Blurn's ball, Ambo Jitsu, and Gi Ball.
Oh.
Karen knows this. She's like, oh, I totally know this. I'm like, I have no idea.
This is a little bit of a different question. What do they have in common? Pyramid, Blurn's Ball, Ambo Jitsu, and Gi Ball. They all share something in common. Okay. Colin says, imagine fake. Karen says, Futurama. Chris says beer. So they're all from TV shows.
Oh, okay.
Pyramid. Yeah. Pyramid's from Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Oh, Pyramid. Yes.
Blurn's Ball is from Futurama. Yeah. Ambo Jitsu
is from Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, that's right.
Is that the chest?
That was the one where they freeze the person and then do their move and then unfreeze them, right?
No, it's the one where they're fighting with blindfold.
Oh, right.
And then Gee-Ball is from Green Wing. I don't know if you guys
know. I don't know that one.
Oh, my God. Of course, Pyramid.
All right. This is a real sport. We're back to real sports. Camp drafting, English pleasure, tent pegging, and eventing.
Whoa. What they have all in common is Urban Dictionary.
Camp drafting, English pleasure, tent pegging, and eventing. Colin says jousting. Karen says croquet. Chris says croquet. No, they're all equestrian events.
Oh. Close. Mm-hmm. Old timey.
All right. Alpine, cross country, Nordic, and speed. So skiing. Yes, skiing.
Yay!
Oh, good. Just throw us a bone there.
See, I can't tell how hard any of these are. All right. Full bore target, cowboy action, metallic silhouette, and bench rest. Full bore target, cowboy action, metallic silhouette, and bench rest. Colin says target shooting. Karen says rodeo. Chris says shooting. Yes, it's shooting.
All right. Oh.
Good job, you guys.
Cowboy action.
I like so many of those names. Yeah. Flutter guts.
Full bore.
Flutter guts.
Cowboy action.
What was flutter guts?
That was frisbee.
You get hit by a frisbee and your guts are fluttering?
It's like dodgeball with frisbees.
Yeah. I'm
serious. Cowboy action and English pleasure.
Tent pegging.
Oh, you kids.
All right, let's take a break. A word from our sponsor.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And you are listening to Good Job, Brayden. Today, we are talking about sports.
Here is a fun wordplay quiz for all of you who like word games and words and all that kind of stuff. So I am going to say some relatively funny anagrams, and you will just tell me what sport that is an anagram of.
All right.
Okay. I have given you guys some pens and paper to help your brains, and if you're stuck, I'll give you some clues. So we'll start with an easy one. Sent in. What you got, Karen?
Tennis.
Yes, yeah. Sent in is tennis. Okay, great. Okay, how about hear cry? H-E-A-R-C-R-Y. Dana?
Archery.
It is archery, yes.
Man. Oh, you mean target in field.
Yeah. Okay, try this one on for size. Blot loaf. Colin?
Football.
Yes, football. So cool. Quick. Karen is still thinking of blot loafs.
I just think of, like, I'm a visual thinker.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
when
exactly.
When you say something, I picture it, and that I just think like, of a loaf of blot, but I don't even know what blot is.
That is why this is difficult. Okay, on that same note, tall kebabs.
Oh.
Colin?
Basketball. Yeah.
Basketball, all right.
That's good. Actually
that actually has some meaning.
Not
I
bad,
like
right?
That.
Yeah, yeah,
I like that. Tall kebabs. Tall kebabs.
Okay, how about Blase Lab?
Oh.
Call it again.
Baseball.
Baseball. Okay. All right. Let's get a little harder, shall we? Let's go with alto power. What a chorus leader might say.
Water polo.
Water polo. Absolutely. Whoa. Sorry. Drops the buzzer. Yes. Alto power. Water polo. How about this? Sing my scat.
Whoa.
Scooby-dooby-doo.
Yeah. You know, SingMyScat, Colin.
Gymnastics.
Colin is proving to be the hero of the anagram round right now. Yes, gymnastics. Okay, then, how about this? Here's another one that's popular in the Olympics. Twig nightlife. Karen now picturing sticks at a disco. Twig nightlife. Colin.
Weightlifting.
Weightlifting! Wow. Oh my god. It's like Rain Man.
Oh, I can't think of any sport.
Dana normally kills at these anagrams.
Finally, I didn't think this was going to go so quickly. Finally, this is maybe more of an outdoor game. You can call it a sport too. Buffalo herds. Buffalo herds. Everyone furiously writing on their pads of paper. Listener, can you do it before the Good Job Brain cast? The two F's are together in the final answer as well.
Shuffleboard.
Yes. Forgets to buzz in because she gets it so quickly.
Shuffleboard.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah. Great job.
Oh, man.
That is your sports anagram quiz.
That was good.
I hope you enjoyed
that
it.
That was good. I especially like the ones where there's,
tall kebabs.
Right, tall kebabs.
And buffalo herds even. Kind of. Yeah.
Blatloaf.
Imagine like a Dalmatian looking meatloaf.
All right. Well, the very first one there sent in was tennis. So I want to talk a little bit about tennis. And this was something when I first started researching this, I was like, oh, this is going to be really contentious. And then I researched a little bit more. I'm like, oh, no, this is pretty straightforward. And then I researched it some more. And I'm like, no, this is even more contentious than I thought. Mm. And what I'm talking about is tennis terminology. Oh. There's so many words in tennis and the tennis scoring. A lot of this, I should warn you, is hotly, hotly contested and debated.
Oh.
So we're going to go just a quick run through.
A preemptive actually.
Yes, I did not know that it was.
A lot of this.
I will try and set straight as much as I can. But a lot of this will be my opinion based on the evidence at hand.
Wow.
So do you guys know where tennis comes from in terms of the sport? You may have heard of a earlier game called jeu de pomme. Have you heard of this?
French.
It is French. Okay, yes. The French are sort of the unquestioned.
Jeu de pomme.
Jeu de pomme.
Game of apple.
Game. P O M M E, but P A U M E. Pomme, meaning like the palm of your hand. It was called the palm game.
Apple game.
Originally, you didn't use rackets. You would serve the ball with the palm of your hand, and you would play back and forth. And this was a medieval French game. This was really sort of what evolved into a lot of our racket across the net games. So coming through medieval times, jeu de pomme was very popular with royalty in particular, because you needed a big area to play it. They would string a net up, and this was an indoor game primarily. So you'd set up a net up across a hall, and you would bat the ball back and forth. It wasn't until the late 1600s that rackets actually really became standardized and part of play. So this game was around for a long time, just using your hands. Once rackets were involved, the game developed into what we would call real tennis or lawn tennis. So it kind of moved outdoors and sort of started more closely resembling the game that we have today.
Were rackets like the performance-enhancing drugs? That, you know, like, you know, you sort of show up. It's not technically in the rules that you can't use this. But
the word tennis comes from the Anglo-French word tenne or tenets, which really means like to hold or to take.
Oh.
You know, so like a word tenable.
Like,
you know?
Tentative.
Yes, right, exactly. And specifically where it comes from is when you were serving the ball, you would shout out tenne, which, you know, more or less means heads up. Like, be prepared to take the serve. Be prepared, you know, it's coming at you. So you would shout out tenne or tenets. That really etymologically came into tennis. So as I say, so the game moved outdoors, kind of gradually changed a little bit, simplified. By the late 1870s, it was really pretty close to the game that we know today. The guy who first published the rules was a man named Major Walter Wingfield. And he suggested the name spheristique, from the Greek, meaning skill at playing at ball.
Aww.
Now,
yeah,
spheristique. Yeah. Didn't catch on. Really, tennis kind of stuck, and we still obviously call it tennis today.
I bet he was so proud of that name, too.
Sounds so fancy.
That's about all that we can agree on in terms of tennis. Everything from on out is going to be, to some level or another, disputed. Huh. All right. So now, tennis, when you score in tennis, the score goes 0, or love, 15, 30, 40, and then you win the game.
Yep. Right.
And a lot of people are like, where did this crazy scoring system come from? Why isn't it just 1, 2, 3, done? and so there is a very common story that goes that, well, in the early days of jeu de paume and tennis, you would use a clock to keep track of the score, and you would advance the hand to 15 for one, to 30 for another, 45. To 45, and then to 60 for a complete game.
Okay,
well, why is it 40 instead of 45? It's like, oh, well, at one point, you know, they realized you had to win the game by 2, so instead of advancing it to 45, you advance it to 40, and then there would be another stop at 50 before you would get back to the top of the clock.
Uh-huh.
This is most likely a nonsense explanation. Mm-hmm. It's just backwards explanation. Really, the most likely origin of it being 60 is that you got to keep in mind, in medieval period, 60 was really considered a very kind of good, perfect number. It was just round, you know, again,
divisible by a lot of numbers.
And the French in particular really embraced this notion. So the same way that we might pick 100 today as a nice round number, it was perfectly normal just for them to pick 60, as that's what you play to, 60. Based on the research I've done, the most likely explanation really is that the score never changed from 45 to 40. It was always 15, 30, 45 done. But that in French, it was a lot more euphonious to say 15, 30, 40. That you kind of just stopped saying the 45.
You stopped saying it.
Is that it was just simplified. Instead of saying 45, you would say 40. Instead of saying 45, you would just say 40.
And everybody knew what you meant.
And everyone knew what you meant. That's right. Because you were all agreed on the same rules ahead of time.
Mm.
Yeah, French numbers are long.
They are, yeah. So they involve math.
Right.
0 in tennis is love. Where does love come from?
I know.
All right, now, there are a lot of people who say, I know, it is this. So let's go ahead, Karen. Where does love come from in tennis?
Well, because love is 0. 0 looks like an egg. Mm-hmm. And so love is actually l'œuf, which is the egg
in French.
And then becomes love.
That is absolutely one of the explanations.
Right. Yeah, okay.
That is absolutely
true. Again, this is probably a back-solved sort of thing. Where you're like, well, let's see.
That was what I had heard before.
Yeah, that was what I had heard also.
I had always heard that one growing up as well, right? And I have to say that as a kid, it seemed a little, I was like, what, really? The egg, you know?
Well,
and
we say goose egg.
So we do, that's right. So that is one explanation, that love comes from l'œuf, French. The other explanation is that it comes from the idea of you're playing for love, playing for honor, instead of playing for money.
And if you had 0 points, then that's really all you had left.
Right. And the love honor one always sounded really straining to me. This is the one that the Oxford English Dictionary cites. They cite most of their support that it comes from love and honor money.
Huh.
There's another explanation that goes out that there is a Dutch word, lof, L-O-F, that means praise or honor or glory. And again, there's a theory that, well, there were a lot of Dutch immigrants in France, and they took the word love, meaning playing for honor. All right. I have to say, despite what OED says, I do believe that it comes from the egg.
Yeah.
Love. And as Karen, you alluded to, there are another examples here. Like, we talk about a goose egg. You know, in English, we say, oh, he put up a big old goose egg.
Yep.
That's a 0.
Mm-hmm.
There's a term in cricket. You talk about a duck, a batter who's out with no score. Hmm. 0. And the duck comes from duck's egg. And you'll still hear it called a duck's egg.
Mm.
So I have to say, looking at those two explanations side by side, knowing that it came from French.
Not a moor. If it was a moor.
There is a well-established tradition of eggs being used to stand for nothing and stand for 0.
Yeah. Yeah.
I believe that that is the etymology of love in tennis.
Mm-hmm.
But just to warn you that you'll see both of those explanations out there. Oh. All right. And finally here, in terms of the tennis etymology, we'll wrap this up. Do you guys know where the word racket comes from?
The racket.
A little rack.
The little tiny rack.
Yeah.
So,
well, is it a French word or?
So we have the word racket, and there are, you know, the French and Italian and Spanish words are all very similar. There's raqueta or raquette, and those words in turn, they all come from an Arabic word, raha or rahat, which means palm of the hand.
Oh.
To bring it all full circle.
Wow.
Cool.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? the federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
All right, and time for our last quiz, and it's a music round. I have clips of songs that I'm going to play, and you guys need to identify the artist, and also, you know, hopefully the song title as well. That'd be helpful, because there is a theme.
Of course.
Oh. And the theme, you might think, oh, I know it. It's pretty easy by the second song. It's not. I'm looking for a very specific thing.
Oh, all right.
Absolutely not sports related. All right, here we go. First one.
You have this look on your face like, I'm going to mess with you guys so good.
You guys aren't going to get any of these.
You're going to eat it.
All right.
10,000 words swarm around my head. 10 million more in books written beneath my bed. I wrote or read them all, went searching in the swarm, still can't find how to hold my hands.
I'll take a stab at it.
Okay.
Is it Willie Nelson?
Incorrect.
Oh.
God, I know that song. Who was that?
Is it Jeff Buckley?
It's, incorrect.
It's somebody like that, though. It's not Jeff Buckley. It's not Elliot Smith. It's not...
It is a band. It is the Avett Brothers.
Oh, okay.
Here's the next one. Which one is it?
I believe this is the Temptations.
Incorrect.
Oh, no.
This is Sugar Pie and a Bunch by the Four Tops.
Yes. This is the Four Tops.
Can't help myself.
Sorry.
By the Four Tops.
Isn't it parentheses Sugar Pie Honey Bunch? They get partial credit.
So you can remember, they can't help themselves. But it's not the Temptations, which is about...
That's a terrible mnemonic.
That's why I failed.
A horrible mnemonic.
It's like, I can't help myself.
It's the opposite of what you think.
So I'm tempted. It's the opposite. Oh,
it is not about Temptations.
Oh, man.
What are the three bands we always get mixed up? Temptations, Four Tops, Foundation.
The OJs.
OJs. Like, oh, man. All right. Here's the next one.
This Nine Inch Nails?
Yes, Nine Inch Nails, The Perfect Drug. All right, and here's the next one. Colin.
Is it One Direction?
Yeah. Yes, it is One Direction.
I'm bootstrapping here because I think I'm onto the theme.
All right, last song. Your pillow and your green is your cup. Dana?
No Doubt.
Yes, No Doubt. Song name is 16. Do we know what the theme is?
No, I'm spooked because you said it was super specific.
I know what the theme. I think I do. So first I was thinking it's numbers because there's numbers and everything. There's 10,000 books, Four Tops, Nine Inch Nails, One Direction, 16. So then I added them up. Because it seemed like a very Karen thing to ask. Is it 10,030?
No. Oh, I thought you really nailed it. No, it is not.
Well, it's something with numbers.
Yes.
It has to be. Something with the numbers.
So 10,000 Words by Ava Brothers. Mm-hmm. A Perfect Drug by Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. What Makes You Beautiful by One Direction. I Can't Help Myself, parentheses, Sugar Pie Honey. By The Four Tops. And 16 by No Doubt. What do those numbers have in common?
Oh.
They're divisible by, or, well, no. Four. No.
1, 4, 6. Oh, they're squares.
Yes.
Okay. They're squares.
They are squares. That was good. Numbers.
That was good.
1 was good. 4 was good. 9 was good. 6. Then after 16, it was like there weren't any popular or songs that's like 25, 36, 49, 81. And so I just kept going up and up and up and
until
up.
You found a song that matched
and
the number.
And I was finally like 10,000.
Wow.
You could also done a song by 10,000 Maniacs, right?
Oh, yeah. Good one.
I like those. I like the ones where you can kind of get onto it, and as I established, think you know it and not know it.
I was like, number, that's so easy. That's not Karen.
Well, that's what I was thinking. There's some other Karen twist to it. Yeah.
No. All right, great. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys for listening in. Hope you learned a lot about flutter guts, our new favorite word, how to do your taxes if you're a professional athlete, and why soccer is called soccer. Yay! You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, which is goodjobbrain.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsors at bonobos.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Congratulations to
the Baltimore Ravens.
Woo! You did it.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.